Well, good evening.
Good evening.
A sleepy kind of evening. I don't know why. Let's do introductions around.
Colleen.
Wendy.
Leslie.
Samia.
Ying.
Marie.
Oh. Jeffrey.
Mika.
Yeah.
Ellie.
So it's lovely to see you, Ying.
Thank you.
It's been a while. We fed the hungry ghosts on Saturday. That worked out very nicely. How many pounds did we provide?
84.
84 pounds of food to Second Harvest. That's marvelous.
We missed you, Jeffrey. We missed you.
Yes. Jeffrey used to bring the food to Second Harvest, but he couldn't do it this year. We did miss you. So we are on number 20 of Weineng's teaching. In which he talks about a very mysterious subject. One that, as you will see in Red Pine, is Red Pine makes an effort to explain it. And Coven also makes an effort to explain it. And I will send you home with this little piece that is left from his talks on the Monday morning group many, many years ago. It's about taking refuge. And in our many, many ceremonies, we always do the same set of little speeches, you could say. The first one is to an admission of what we are, our human beingness. Because without that, if we still think that we're king of the world or the most marvelous thing that ever happened or that we are pure and perfect in every way, we can't take the precepts. Because the precepts are guidance to how to live this life as honest, authentic people. And so, admission, all my ancient wrong actions arising from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion based on mind, speech, and body, altogether I now fully avow. It isn't saying I'll be good and I'll never do anything bad again at all. It just says, I admit it, that this is, in terms of perfection, a flawed situation. But then, the next step is to take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And in the way that we do it, we say we return to Buddha, return to Dharma, and return to Sangha. Where do we return to? Right here. It's called going home. Go home right here. So Weineng is very outspoken about this, and it's the only place that I've ever seen this where he says it. I take refuge in the pure Dharma body, Buddha, in my own material body. Boom, just like that. I take refuge in the myriad-fold transformation body Buddha in my own material body. I take refuge in the future and perfect realization body Buddha in my own material body. So that's very big. He says to recite this three times. He says, this material body is an inn, and it's not a fit refuge. So trying to take refuge in this inn that we're given that is a remarkable creation, you could say, or a remarkable situation or a dynamic, but it's not a refuge. Once you think it's a refuge, then you fall and break a leg and, you know, something else happens and it just gets actually worse and worse as time goes on. So it's not a refuge. But the three bodies I just mentioned are your ever-present Dharma nature. They're your nature. Everyone has them. But because people are deluded, they don't see them. They look for the three-bodied Tathagata outside themselves and don't see the three-bodied Buddha in their own material body. Good friends, listen to this good friend of yours. And I will tell you, good friends, how to see within your material body the three-bodied Buddha present in your Dharma nature. The three-bodied Buddha that arises from this nature of yours. So the three-bodied Buddha is the body of reality. The first one is the Dharma body, is called the Dharma body, and this is the Dharma in which we take refuge. It's the truth. The truth of things. Sometimes Dharma is called the law, not meaning in a judgmental kind of way, but the way things actually fit. The way things actually mean, how things can be, do be. The actual experience of this truth, is our realization body. This is the Buddha in which we take refuge. And the manifestation of this body in our thoughts, words, and deeds is our transformation body. This is the Sangha in which we take refuge. This is a very ancient, way more ancient than Buddhism. The way that we struggle to reach our minds around the bigness of things and the activity and the action and the doing of things, of the way our life, which is so vast, can be expressed in some way. And how we can understand our life in this body. Weineng says, everyone's nature is fundamentally pure, and 10,000 dharmas are present in this nature. And I would say it's 10 million, jillion, quadrillion dharmas are present in this body. Fundamentally pure. If we think about doing something bad, we commit bad deeds. And if we think about doing something good, we perform good deeds. Thus, we know all dharmas are present in our nature. is in our thinking. But our nature itself remains pure. The sun and moon are always shining. It is only due to cloud cover that there is light above but darkness below, and we can't see the sun or moon or stars. Then suddenly the wind of wisdom comes along and blows the clouds and drives the fog away, and a panorama of 10,000 images appears all at once. That's wonderful. That's Wei Meng's words. Our nature is pure like the clear sky above. And our wisdom is like the sun and the moon. Our wisdom is always shining. But if externally we become attached to objects, the clouds of delusion cover up our nature and we can't see it. Then because we need a good friend who explains the true teaching, our delusions are blown away and everything inside and outside becomes perfectly clear. And the 10,000 dharmas in this nature of ours all appear. This nature of ours in which the 10,000 dharmas are present is what we mean by the pure dharma body. Those of you who take refuge in yourselves, if you get rid of bad thoughts and bad practices, this is called taking refuge. So that was the Buddha, the Dharma body, the transformation body, the myriad-fold transformation body, he says. If we didn't think, our nature would be utterly empty. When we think, we transform ourselves. We know this. If we think evil thoughts, we turn into the denizens of hell. If we think good thoughts, we turn into the deities of heaven. Malice turns us into beasts. Compassion turns us into bodhisattvas. Wisdom transports us to the higher realms, and ignorance sends us into the lower depths. Our nature is constantly transforming itself, but deluded people are unaware of this. Once we think of goodness, wisdom arises. One lamp can dispel 1,000 years of darkness, and one thought of wisdom can end 10,000 years of ignorance. Don't think about what's past. Keep thinking about what's next. When your next thought is always good, this is what we call the realization body. One bad thought results in the destruction of 1,000 years of good ones. But one good thought results in the annihilation of 1,000 years of bad ones. In the face of impermanence, if your next thought is good, this is what we call the realization body. The thoughts that come from the Dharma body are your transformation body. And when every thought is good, this is your realization body. When you yourself become aware of this and you yourself cultivate this, this is called taking refuge. Your material body is made of flesh and bones. Your material body is but an inn and not a fit place of refuge. Just become aware of your three bodies, and you will understand what is truly important. It's such a deep mystery, and he says it in such a very plain and simple way that although it doesn't exactly spell everything out, it points right back to you and me. As Red Pine points out, he says, our thoughts arise, it turns out, from our Dharma body, including the thought that we have a material body. And as they arise, they become our transformation body. And when every thought is good, they form our realization body. The three bodies of every Buddha turn out to be nothing more or less than these very thoughts of ours. The ocean and its waves turn out to be one and the same body of water. So why not dive in and swim with the Dharma fishes, says Red Pine. Let's go for it. This is probably the most essential part of this whole teaching in some ways, and in other ways it's the most mysterious. This statement of one lamp can dispel 1,000 years of darkness and one thought of wisdom can end 10,000 years of ignorance is a very famous statement, and one that it's very helpful to remember. We have a song, every little light will shine. We know about this. We know about what is it about a light in a bushel? I mean, we have lots of ways of talking about this in our own culture, our own intrinsic understanding of our life. We see the light in others. We often don't feel or see the light in ourselves, but we very often see it in others. So I will share with you what Koban said. Dharma means truth. Kaya means body. So it's also called Dharma Kaya. This truth body or law body can't be seen, and yet we say the name of this Buddha is truth. In this text, nirmana means transformation. What you see, hear, and speak all are nirmana kaya. The original meaning refers to when we see things, myriad transformations appearing. In psychological terms, it refers to various perceptions, but in religious terms, it has deeper meaning. When we really see something, when we really see Buddha, we see nirmana kaya. That which is emptiness is form, that we say in the Heart Sutra, speaks of nirmana kaya. That which is emptiness is form, speaks of nirmana kaya. Nirmana kaya is the historical Buddha who understands all the suffering of the world because it happens in his body. If you understand that Shakyamuni Buddha has been dead for many centuries, you don't understand Nirmanakaya Buddha. When Shakyamuni Buddha appears, all beings become Buddha. Just the form is a little different. Flower is flower, cloud is cloud, rain is rain. When transmission from master to disciple takes place, the disciple is taking refuge in the master as Nirmanakaya Buddha, meaning that the disciple is taking refuge within herself. If you seek for Buddha somewhere else, you never reach him. A Buddha understands all the suffering of every war because it happens in his body. C sum means fully, altogether, without exception, and bo is to realize and to reach. Sambo is thusness, and if you want to express it, you point. Sambhogakaya, of course, is everywhere the same as Dharmakaya. This reward body is not action causing an effect, but the action itself, which tells its nature. It happens even if nobody knows and you yourself don't know. Your own practice tells it. You are doing fine. You are enlightened. The first time I heard Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nirmanakaya explained was that Dharmakaya is the sun, Sambhogakaya is the light that comes down and enlivens everything, and the Nirmanakaya is the life that comes because of the light. So that's a very simplistic way, but it's helpful to point to what this is pointing to. So there's time for questions, discussion.
I have a question.
Leslie?
this is like one of those crazy big questions. When we're talking about truth here, are they referring to the truth as if there's one statement that is true, or is it a broader description that conventional reality and ultimate reality,
mm-hmm.
and ultimate reality being described as more true or the truth.
Yes.
So in these contexts, when they're saying Dharma is the truth, do you know what's being referred to?
Well, it's pointing to the truth of the truth, which is that although there is this sense of the bigness and the absolute sense of things that are beyond, in a way, a kind of beyondness, or so bigness that it's beyond our comprehension, and what we might call a mystery, and an ordinary everyday. But what it's pointing to is that it's the same thing. It's the same, and it happens because we're here. We're experiencing it as our own life, in our thoughts, and in our bodies. So being thinking creatures, we often attach to the thought of it and think it's out there somewhere. And Yin Yang keeps pointing back to say, no, it's in you. It's in your own thought, own thinking. It's how you think. And Blake said the same thing. You know, we make our own heaven or hell.
Mm-hmm.
We do, every minute.
So that's the Dharma.
And that's the Dharma, but then where do the thoughts come from? So then you have to get bigger again and bow down to it because you really don't know. But you know it's incredible because it is. Up.
Thank you. So you were talking about the law. You referred to the law for a little bit, and you say the law refers to the way things are. So, yeah, okay. And it refers to the way things fit, and so I'm still there with you. And then you say, and the way things mean. And that's where I lost you.
I confess I did say that. Not sure what I meant, but
okay.
it's how our mind works, I think, that we find meaning in the way that things fit together. I think of it in terms really of the little I know of science, of how we're finding out, you know, how the body works and how to reach the stars and all the things that make up all this stuff that we are isn't random. And the not randomness is a kind of, it gives a kind of meaning to it that feels like it's part of this way of talking about the Dharmakaya, about the physical laws that have been discovered. So, since Archimedes was in the bathtub, so, you know, all of those things are part of it.
Right. So even though we attribute the meaning to it after the fact, it's still the law.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Thank you.
So, all wars are ultimately suicide because you're killing your own body.
Yes.
The Dharma body being the universe, and that's also your body.
It's dreadful.
It is.
We're all feeling it. Whether we know we're feeling it or not, we're all feeling it. Very, very, very painful. But we're here. And we do what we can. And that's all we can do, is what we can. And not to feel bad if we can't do more, because we can't. Our little pipsqueaks when it comes to changing the world. But what he's pointing to is what kind of thinking we do. And thinking about the situation now, it's really, really important to have a clear mind. and to have good thoughts. Good thoughts to all the suffering. Over there and here. It's tough right now. You had a question?
I do, although what you just said gave me another question, which is, I'll skip that one. I'll go back to the one I had. You read near, when transmission from master to disciple takes place, the disciple is taking refuge in the master as Nirmanakaya Buddha, meaning that the disciple is taking refuge within herself. I want to thank you for your on-the-fly change of himself to herself, because that is very cool.
You're welcome. I copied the Lotus Sutra one time. That's practice, you know, you got to write it out, the whole thing. And I changed every hymn to her.
So it's nice. Sometimes you'll see something and it will say her. There's one that I see all the time, is how can a noble son or daughter,
yes,
blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And usually when I see it, when it's first posed as a question, it's just him. And when it's posed as an answer, it's him, it's both. And I wonder if that's the translator, if that's the original, and I appreciate how it's changed, but we're also losing the fact that it wasn't that in the original, so it's really very interesting.
Well, it's a cultural thing.
Yes. But thank you for making that change.
Oh, you're welcome. We have the power to change these things, and we should do it.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Karen?
My continued theme of trying to figure out where this purification versus confession, and where all this, where this practice fits in with other practices I'm familiar with. And, this chapter talks about, I go through this seeming confessional statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, it just made me realize, now that we're doing the Pali version of, is it Pali? The Heart Sutra, we're doing...
Oh, it's Sino-Japanese.
Sino-Japanese.
Yeah, Chinese-Japanese.
So now I don't remember exactly what it all... what the translation is. But I'm wondering, is there a portion of that that is kind of confessional, or sort of, what portion of our ceremony is sort of a confessional piece, if there is? I mean, we say the vows, but we don't say, you know what, totally lost the vow this week or whatever.
No, it's saying all dharmas are marked with emptiness.
Is it?
Yeah. In the Heart Sutra?
Yeah.
All dharmas are marked with emptiness. They do not appear nor disappear. They are not tainted nor pure. They do not increase or decrease. Therefore, in emptiness, no form, no feeling, perception, impulse is consciousness. So all that we think of as our body, the form and feeling and all of that, is just an ephemeral, it's like a bubble. It's very transparent, translucent. And it's the translucence that Huineng is pointing to.
Yeah. That's the full moon ceremony that we do, where we kind of do the dhaka confession thing to each other.
Yes.
Is that, would that fall under that question?
So I remember it when
Wendy
did the vow ceremony. There was a sort of a confessional.
Yeah, at the beginning.
But I didn't get to do the full moon, so. But yeah,
That's what the full moon ceremony is. It's an opportunity to admit and connect with those who've been offended by me and clear it up. Just use our honest, true mind to clear up and return to what's true. So it's very refreshing. It's kind of fun. Oh, remember when I did blah, blah, blah? Oh, yeah, I do remember.
Do we know how that started?
Buddha started it when they first got together. They were new with each other, and it was just a group of guys hanging out and with Buddha, and they started... I always imagine that somebody took somebody's razor. And he went to Buddha and he said, Joe took my razor. What am I going to do? We're supposed to be all this pure and kind and good people, and he took something from me. And Buddha said, well, let's get everybody together and we'll talk about this. And let's make a plan. So they made a plan. Let's get together 4 times a month with every phase of the moon, and we'll gather in a circle and we will recite the precepts and step forward if there is a fault, a mistake.
So they did it every month?
They did it 4 times a month.
Once a week. Not just on the full moon.
Yeah. But you know, if you have a little group of people living very close to each other, you have to do this or something like it, as Ying knows very well. We're thinking of Jikoji. Because it people just get on each other's nerves and they do stupid things. And then people get irritated and then they, you know, begin to build up stories, and that stories get pretty nasty, and then nobody's talking to anybody, and it's horrible. It can just really be horrible.
The same process too is I just listened. I'm listening to a lot of Red Anderson right now, and all day long. In fact, he's talking about the same process, but just within yourself as you're trying to. Say keep with a vow or with what you just trying to, for example, there is some obsessive thought that just keeps, and speaking of thinking and our place or anyway, trying to, like, I'm trying to work with this weird obsession right now, and it almost feels, when I come back, you know, kind of with awareness of it, it seems like a kind of confessional process. Like, you know, I told myself I wouldn't be going down this road, and here I am again, and I'm going to try not to be obsessing on this thing, you know.
So a lot of times it helps just to bow to it.
Bowing is.
And say, hello, there you are again. Oh. Hello, and just let it go again.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a thing that's coming and going and coming and going. But you don't have to get interested in it. It doesn't mean anything. Ultimately. I know it's hard. It's hard. It grabs us. Yeah.
Yeah, I do love the formal ceremony that you've done, and that's the only time I experienced it like that. And the ones that they do at Jikoji are different, not so much sharing with each other, just more chanting.
Yes.
And retaking the precepts, which I can see value, but I really do love what you do, what you have done, which is sometimes people just need the permission to speak the things that are hard.
Yes.
And then it becomes so easy. You follow everybody's example, and once it's been said, you realize it's no big deal.
Yes.
But internally, you know, it's
it feels big.
Right. But I'm curious, too, I wonder if it requires the presence of a teacher, you know? And I wonder if you have come into situations where someone shares something so big that the other person is actually not ready to forgive, so to speak, right? And so I'm thinking about Jikoji,
yes.
Because not the teacher isn't always there,
yes.
Let's just say.
Yes.
And then what happens? And how can we support this kind of thing if we don't currently have a form for it?
I think the teacher should be there. I think that's an essential part of it. I think Buddha was there the whole time.
Right. And then everything becomes kind of a small or incomplete.
Yes.
In
yes.
Light.
You get some perspective that way. And the teacher provides a projection out of the situation in a way, and it's a little unreal in a way, but it's an important projection to allow some kind of balance to the situation. I do think so.
Mm-hmm. So whether it's at Jikoji or let's say at work, where I wouldn't necessarily want to, you know, where I do still think people can shift without necessarily having a known leader being present.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if you have thoughts about how we can support this Sambhogakaya manifesting when there's not necessarily the structure of a leader already.
I think our biggest help in the world is just to be truly honest with people. Lovingly honest. It's not the kind that we did it back in the 60s where we told all the, you know, anything that came to our mind that we thought was true, we'd just say it. Or some people thought that was the thing. But to say things in a way that is helpful and true. So if things are really bugging you, find a way of, a kind way of bringing that up into consciousness. It's thoughts again. It's how we're able to think about things and allow the thinking to be helpful and wholesome. Leslie?
Well, I practice in another tradition as well, and the way, I mean, there has to be somewhere that a shared expectation is created among people, but in that tradition, if I'm aware that my thoughts have led to deeds that negatively affect somebody, I speak from my place only.
Yes.
So I don't try to raise, if I've been hurt, I don't try to raise the other person's awareness.
Right, you can't.
I have to take care of only myself
exactly.
And speaking for myself.
Yes.
Without a teacher, without another authority. But again, the group has that expectation that one would do that.
Well, that's the best kind of communication.
Yeah.
If the other person really hears you, and you hear you in a situation like that in a different way too.
And I have used it outside of the spiritual tradition, just saying, you know, I noticed that last week I said this, and if it had been said to me, my feelings would have been hurt, so I'm sorry if I caused you any harm. You know, just owning your street is effective.
Yeah.
Sometimes. So I just offer that.
Go to somebody and say, I was an idiot. Sorry. Thank you. That's a great way to end this. Oh, it's way late. Mm-hmm. 1 minute sit.